Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to the meeting of the California Ocean Protection Council. This is our fourth meeting of since our inception. My name is Mike Christman. I'm currently serving as Secretary for Resources for the State of California and also Chair of this august body. Nice to be here in Santa Barbara, and nice to be in this beautiful area. We've got, I think most of you know, we've got quite a full agenda today, and one of the things I think you'll see as we move through our agenda, we want to make sure that we provide opportunity for public dialogue and public input into our processes. We are a new council. As I said earlier, we are in our fourth meeting. We're kind of feeling our way along. You'll see today, later in the day, we're going to be talking about the inception of our strategic planning effort that was laid out for us in the statute that created the council, and some other housekeeping activities that will show you that as a council we're in, quite frankly, in the startup mode. But one of the things I'd like to do before we begin is first of all thank the County of Santa Barbara for providing the venue for today's meeting. And community, of course, is well known for its involvement in ocean and coastal issues, and a perfect venue for a meeting for the California Ocean Protection Council. What I'd like to do before we begin, I see Congresswoman Capps is in the audience. We'll call on her after I make my comments. Nice to have you with us, Congresswoman, and assuming your district, nice to be here. And then we'll have some member announcements, and then we'll begin down through the agenda. You'll note on the agenda that item 3 on the agenda is public comments. Those public comments are on for non-agenda items on the agenda. Those of you who are here that like to speak on another topic, be sure and fill out these request to speak cards. They're where? Somewhere. Where are they, Brian? Are they in the back of the room? In the back of the room, okay. Yes, back in the back table. I see back against the wall there. So please be sure and fill them out, and so we can get a record of who you are and what you'd like to speak on. Let me, if I might, before we begin today, provide a perspective of some of our as a council's accomplishments and some of our current activities. In 2005, we held meetings in Sacramento, San Francisco, and La Jolla. At the state level, we as a council continue to make great progress in fulfilling the requirements of the council and the requirements of the governor's Ocean Action Plan. At the national level, we are working with key leaders to push federal implementation on some of our policy recommendations, both in the action plan and in the recommendations, too, from the reports from the United States Commission on Ocean Policy and the Pew Oceans Commission report. In February, we'll be in Washington to meet with as a part of the National Governors Association meeting and my counterparts at the National Natural Resources Leadership Council of the States on one of our main agenda items during that meeting will be ocean and coastal issues. In preparation for that meeting, we are working with Admiral Jim Watkins, who is the former Chief of Naval Operations and former Secretary of Energy and also former chair of the United States Commission on Ocean Policy, and Leon Panetta, former California congressman from the Monterey area, Chief of Staff to the President, and former chair of the Pew Oceans Commission report, two individuals who have been very supportive of our activities and the work that we do, been very helpful in helping us guide the work of the council. Our goal, of course, is to find ways we can engage the federal government on ocean and coastal issues and help implement the National Commission's recommendations on coastal and ocean policies that we think, of course, will further California's interest in those activities. Our Assistant Secretary for Coastal and Ocean Policy at the Resources Agency, Brian Baird, of course, will be traveling to Washington this month in his role as Vice Chair of the Coastal States Organization. And in that capacity, not only being our right hand here in California in terms of ocean and coastal policy, but he'll be leading a creation of a new strategic plan for all 35 coastal states and territories and commonwealths across the nation, and we're convinced will serve us well in helping to represent our interests effectively. In 2005, we released a comprehensive assessment on coastal-related industries and convened an Ocean Economic Summit to better understand these findings. We are working with NOAA and other partners to establish an ocean stewardship communications campaign. The information research and outreach strategy that we adopted, that many of you had a part in, were widely circulated and continues to receive national attention and national support. We are supporting on-the-ground coastal and ocean projects using $26.2 million in initial funding from our environmental license plate fund here in California, the state tidelands revenues, and various bond measures. The council has approved the expenditure of just over $4 million in a number of projects, among which are the remotely operated underwater research vehicles for the work out here in the Channel Islands, sediment studies along the Klamath River, developing a sustainable fisheries revolving fund that many of you in the room have been involved in, and the removal of derelict fishing gear, eelgrass and native oyster restoration in the San Francisco Bay, ocean and coastal research program on new methods of ecosystem management, and the support of this coming September's California and World Oceans Conference down in Long Beach you'll be hearing about a little bit later in the on the agenda today. We've made, for such a new organization, we've made very, very substantial progress here in California. I think it's indicative of the commitment that Californians have to ocean protection, but as where I sit, the work of Sam Shukat and the Coastal Conservancy and his staff and our staff at the agency and other people who have been very helpful, is we couldn't have done it without them, and I just want to thank everybody for that and acknowledge their leadership and help in that effort. Thank you guys very much. We really appreciate it. I'd like to, if I might, give a brief status report on our OCS oil and gas leasing activities, because Santa Barbara always seems to be an area that's interested in that, so we thought we'd key that up in the beginning, maybe would answer some questions as before we move through the agenda. You residents here in Santa Barbara, of course, know firsthand the potentially devastating effect of offshore oil and gas leasing can have on our coastal resources. The distress caused the community here in 1969 by the oil spill of the Unocal's Platform A is, I think, a constant reminder of all of us as we deal with these issues on an ongoing basis. Since the council's last meeting, additional proposals were introduced in Congress to eliminate the longstanding congressional moratorium on oil and gas leasing in the Outer Continental Shelf. Governor Schwarzenegger's position on this issue was very clear. It was clear during the campaign, continues to be clear. He wants to maintain a moratorium on the leasing off the California coast and make that permanent. We as a council, of course, sent two letters in March of 05 and in September of 05 to key members of Congress, including your own Congresswoman Lois Capps, opposing any effort to lift that moratorium. On November 3rd, the governor wrote a number of members of Congress saying he was in strong opposition of lifting that moratorium. In that letter, he specifically said he opposed any efforts to weaken the federal moratorium for oil and gas leasing off the coast of California and supports those efforts to make the moratoria and the presidential deferrals for California permanent. Of course, I think you all know those efforts, not only our efforts, but all of your efforts in this room and all across California, were very successful in helping to make sure that any attempt to eliminate that moratorium at the federal level was defeated, particularly in the energy bill. Many of you worked on that, too. I think it goes without saying, given that as a backdrop, that we will continue both at the council level and working with our elected representatives, working with community leaders across California, will continue to intervene if additional efforts are made in the coming year to weaken these critical measures and protection of our ocean and coastal resources. We have a full agenda today with lots of action items. If you've had a chance to look at it, we're going to be taking a close look at a consideration of the authorization of $11.9 million in project awards and grant funds for ecosystem-based management. It's important to remember that this is key because one of the guiding principles of the work that we're going to be doing here at the Ocean Protection Council is focusing on ecosystem-based management approaches in the marine environment and in the terrestrial environment as they affect the marine environment. We're going to be hearing updates on our strategic plan. The plan's development process is geared towards completion for June of this year. We think, of course, that's a very aggressive but achievable goal, and we're going to ask many of you to help us in that process. As is in most strategic plans, particularly public bodies like this, it's going to be an open and inclusive. We're going to want a lot of help in helping to lay out our goals and objectives for the upcoming years. It's going to be, I think the statute says, a 5-year strategic plan, if I'm not mistaken. We're also going to be examining the next steps in hiring executive director and a science advisor to the council and establishing a science advisory panel for the Ocean Protection Council. Some of the other issues we're going to be talking about today are the ocean observation system, once-through cooling system for power plants, the harbor seal issue, Office of Prevention and Response rate reduction issues, and various other administrative matters. So, again, that's our synopsis of the startup of this council, and we'd want to thank all of you for your help and support in getting us there. We're a work in progress. And the strategic plan that we're going to be beginning this year or within the next month or so is going to help kind of lay out that kind of that vision, if you will, and that direction for the work that we do. I'd like to ask if there are any council members have any announcements or anything they'd like to say at this point in time before we begin. Sure. Pedro, go ahead, please.
The chair for the opportunity to make a couple of remarks. I mean, those of you know that Santa Barbara, in some people's minds, is in fact the birthplace of the environmental movement because of the unfortunate circumstances in 1969 with the oil spill. And it galvanized this community, and it galvanized this state, and it galvanized the nation, and it spread around the world in terms of the higher perception and appreciation for the environment and for environmental protection. I consider this to be a unique opportunity and a rare privilege to serve on this council as the identified representative from the California State Assembly, and I want to thank the Speaker, Fabian Nunez, for appointing me. I think in part because of the 8 years that I sat on the California Coastal Commission, serving as an advocate for people in this community, and I want to thank the people in this community for their support for my efforts while I was there. Any success that I enjoyed in that capacity is directly attributable to the help that all of you offered to me in that position. And I also think that this entity is a little different from others. Those of you that are involved in grassroots organizations know what it's like when the public comment is at the end of the meeting. That's really a way to tell you that you're not welcome. But the chair has made sure that the public comment on non-agenda items is one of the very first things that we do when we come to communities to talk with people. And I want to thank Secretary Christman for making sure that that is maintained in a high priority. And I look forward to public participation, for people to come to the microphone and express their opinions about what they think we ought to be doing. This truly is a unique opportunity for us to weave together the different elements of jurisdictions that agencies have so that we can take a big picture perspective on protecting our resource that is so valuable to us. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Pedro. Very well said. Thank you very much. Paul?
Thank you, Secretary Christman, and for the opportunity to say a few words. I wanted to voice the regrets of the Lieutenant Governor, who was unable to be here. As you know, the chair of the State Lands Commission is a member of the Ocean Protection Council, and he has attended most of the other meetings. Pursuant to our rules, the chairmanship will rotate at the first meeting of the State Lands Commission, and so for the rest of the year, it will be Controller Steve Wesley representing the commission at these meetings. And I'd like to note that Cindy Ehrenberg, who's the Deputy Controller who works on State Lands Commission matters for the Controller, is not presently in the audience, but she's out in the hall. And if any of you have questions about the Controller's role in this, I'd be able to respond, as well as Cindy, who's here. I also wanted to echo some of the same comments that Assemblymember Nava and Secretary Christman made. Santa Barbara is kind of at the center of the coast for California in a number of ways. It's wonderful in terms of the resources that are here. I had an opportunity this morning to go out and look at the butterfly forest out there at Elwood Mesa, and I'd never seen that before. It was just wonderful to see all the monarch butterflies clustered there. But the flip side of that, of course, is all of the impacts that have come from our use of the coast, particularly the oil development. And it's something the State Lands Commission has been involved with for a long time and still very actively involved with in terms of managing the remaining leases there. And I particularly wanted to thank Linda Kropp from EDC and Carla Frisk for setting up a meeting for me yesterday with the Environmental Coalition. I had an opportunity to meet with representatives of the environmental community, as well as folks from Congresswoman Katz's office and Assemblymember Nava's office were there as well. And they acquainted me with some of the desires of this area in terms of what we do at the Lands Commission. I appreciate that direct connection. And in terms of announcements, I just had two. First, in terms of projects that affect people here and that I know everyone's interested in, presently the revised draft environmental impact report and EIS for the LNG facility off of Oxnard, the BHP project, is expected to be released sometime in March, with a hearing before the State Lands Commission anticipated for August. I'm sure, as all of you know who've been involved with this sort of thing, there's always some uncertainty about how these things are completed, but I wanted to let you know what the rough timetable was. And similarly, I know removal of the shell mounds is a huge issue down here, and our present understanding is that we're likely to complete the draft environmental impact report on that project and get it out later this summer. And I'd be happy to talk with anybody about those issues, either publicly during the public comment period or out in the hall afterwards. And that's all I had to say. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. I've had an opportunity to visit with the state controller. He's eager to get started. He's obviously very interested in these issues, and as he was as we began, as we were putting the legislation together, he's very supportive of it. I'm glad to have him back on. Anything else from anybody? Okay. Thank you. One item that, because of the next item is an action item. This is kind of a, because again, as we're, this council is kind of a work in progress. I need to have a little conversation before we begin about designees, voting designees on the council. I think, and we want to, I want to have this publicly, but it'll be a conversation, I think, between all of us up here. The statute is specific about regular members of the council. There's three of us, and there are two ex officio members, one representing the state senate, and one representing the state assembly. The schedules of folks have been such that in some meetings it's challenging to getting all of the three of us here in at one time. There's been some suggestions that we may want to vote, and I'm essentially, I think if we're going to designate an official designee of a voting member, we're probably going to have to take it back and change the statute, because I think the statute is pretty clear that there are no designees. Let me, and I invite others to chime in here, but I think it's important not to designate designees, if you will. I know that's a double whatever, but I think that over time what will happen, and obviously no criticism to anybody here, but I think all of us have been involved in the public process enough to know that over time, designees will be the ones who over time will begin showing up more than the permanent members. And I think that would be unfortunate for particularly a council like this. So quite frankly, I think we're just going to have to work around schedules. I would encourage us not to go back to the legislature, at least at this point in time, to have a conversation about designees. There'll be other issues, it seems to me, as we move through our strategic plan and we kind of get a rhythm to what the council is about and how we do our business. Over time, we may want to go back to the legislature for some cleanup legislation on some glitches that have shown up as we've gone through the operations of the council. But I think really important for us not to, at least at this stage of the game, begin to try to make those exceptions. Any other comments or suggestions from anybody?
Pedro? And I think I probably should explain it. Secretary Crisman is being very kind, because how this came about was at the last meeting. I'm making motions. I'm trying to vote. And as a member of the Assembly, the Senate representative and the Assembly representative are non-voting members. So we're not supposed to do that stuff. But I get too excited. And
it suddenly dawned on me about halfway through the meeting that this was happening, and I said, well, maybe we better not. So again, work in progress, okay?
I do agree that there are some things that we're going to need to work out, and I think it's premature at this point to try to introduce legislation to address some things, certainly in this cycle. And that we're going to have a track record after a year's experience with this, and in 07, it may be a better time to take a better take a different look at how we want to structure it.
Okay.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I fully agree with you. I think it's very important that this was set up this way with the Secretary and Lieutenant Governor at a high level. It's a very important piece for California. It's a very important piece for the Governor and the people, as I mentioned. And I think it's we don't meet that often. It's once a quarter, and I don't think it's asking too much to keep that high caliber of people in representation. It shows the commitment here, and I think, to me, I think it's very important. And it's a slippery slope once you start there.
Yeah, it is. Okay. Phil, any comments? Okay. Okay. All right, great. Paul.
Just,
oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Since I am the designee here, I figured I should speak up for designees.
No offense.
I think a lot of what the previous speakers have mentioned are absolutely correct in terms of trying to seek the highest level of public involvement and public official involvement in the council. I would point out that particularly for the incoming chair of the State Lands Commission, he's on 57 boards and commissions. It's just all of them deserve his attention, but it's absolutely impossible to
Does he have designees on those commissions?
Yes.
And that's you?
Yes.
That's you, right?
No, generally it's he has deputies like Cindy Ehrenberg.
And they are designated in statute probably or what?
Sometimes they're designated in statute, but generally he designates them. It's Department of Finance is the same way. They have two
right. Okay.
To do this. So I guess I'm saying that in my mind, that question is still open. We're,
sure.
As you keep saying, we're working our way. It's a work in progress. But
I
see at some point we might want to revisit that issue.
I think so. It's probably something we might want to consider during our strategic planning process as we think about it.
Good idea.
You know? Okay. Okay. Anything else? Okay, with that behind us, I'll now, the first action of the day then is the consideration and adoption of our September 23rd meeting minutes. And members, you have in your first tab in the binder and, of course, on the screen online are those meeting minutes. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes? If not, I will entertain a motion then to approve those minutes as mailed.
Move the motion.
Second. Approve. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. All right. Thank you. Next on the agenda is the public comment period. Again, there are requesting to speak cards in the back of the room. I ask you to folks who want to speak during the public comment period to fill them out and get them up to us. I'd like to first call on Congresswoman Lois Capps, who is here with us. We're in her congressional district, and Congresswoman, it's nice to have you with us, and we'd like, if you'd like to come up and say a few words, we'd invite you to do so.
Thank you, Secretary Chrisman. Good morning, and welcome to the California Ocean Protection Council, to Santa Barbara, and to my congressional district. I want to particularly acknowledge our own Assembly Member Pedro Nava, and we're pleased that he can be participating not only here today, but on this very important work. Thank you all for being here today, but thank you, too, for your service to our state and to the future of our oceans. I want to invite you and welcome you to the 23rd Congressional District and acknowledge staff members who are here, Greg Haas, Christine Elliott, who work on these issues along with Jonathan Laventis in our congressional office in Washington, D.C. With 220 miles of coastal area, with seven active busy harbors, with one national marine sanctuary, a national estuary, and our Channel Islands National Park, these issues raise very high on the agenda of the 23rd Congressional District. It is a very hopeful sign to the Central Coast to have the Council here in Santa Barbara, because so many coastal and ocean policies play such a vital role in our lives. It is here that many of the conflicts over coastal and ocean management are also the most stark, so clearly visible. The harmful toxic algal blooms, the polluted runoffs, the oil spills, the unsafe beaches, the declining fisheries. These competing demands drive home the need for bold leadership, particularly today, as the fifth largest economy in the world and with a coastline of 1,100 miles, California faces tough resource management decisions. And yet, by working with the alliances of interests and with leadership such as yourselves, significant progress has been made on some thorny issues. I commend this council for your pioneering role in this area. Particularly, I'm thankful for your recent letters to Congress opposing federal legislation to end the long-standing bipartisan moratorium on new offshore drilling off so much of the U.S. coast, including off California coast. Your comments were a valuable asset in California's fight to protect its vibrant coastal economy and environment from new offshore drilling. I want to briefly update you, if I could in these few minutes, on a few federal proposals before Congress right now, which seriously threaten California's ability to protect its coastline. I urge you strongly to engage, as you've begun to do, on these issues. As you know, the energy policy, and I serve on the Energy Subcommittee of Energy and Commerce in the United States House of Representatives, the Energy Policy Act definitely weakens the Coastal Zone Management Act. California used the CZMA to stop development of the 36 undeveloped oil leases off the Central Coast, right out behind us here today. The energy bill also has reduced our state's role in LNG facility siting decisions. And it directs the Interior Department to inventory all potential oil and gas resources on the Outer Continental Shelf, including areas now off limits to drilling. So make no mistake, these provisions have weakened the rights of California and local governments to raise legitimate objections to offshore development. I have strongly opposed these provisions. I've offered amendments to strike them in committee. Unfortunately, they were defeated on near party line votes. In the coming year, I'm going to be working with my colleagues again to repeal these harmful provisions. And I hope and strongly ask you to weigh in as a council and to get Governor Schwarzenegger to do the very same thing. His voice could make the difference between California retaining or losing authority over the coast. One issue I hope the council and governor will focus on is Chairman Richard Pombo's proposal to end the ban on new offshore drilling around large parts of the country, including California. Some coastal governors, like Jeb Bush in Florida, are saying this proposal gives states control over their coasts and that new drilling everywhere is just inevitable. I'm here to tell you, and I hope I don't have to convince you, these arguments just don't hold water. So here is the straight story as I see it. Among the many provisions, the Pombo proposal would end the annual congressional moratorium immediately. It also permanently removes Congress from any future decisions about offshore drilling, takes it off our table. Theoretically, his proposal leaves the presidential moratorium in place until 2012. But this president, or whoever follows him, could end that whenever he or she wants. Not a betting person, but I wager that if Congress ends the moratorium, President Bush would quickly follow suit. That would mean the immediate end to ban on new offshore drilling of California and other coastal states. Now, to be fair, Mr. Pombo's proposal does let states that support drilling have some control, but this, as we would know, comes at the expense of their neighbors. For example, if Oregon decides they want new drilling off their coast, our state would clearly have no say in the matter, and even though drilling off Oregon coast certainly would affect our state. Supporters of the proposal say that it helps states that oppose new drilling as well, but I don't see any evidence of that. For example, after the presidential moratorium lapses in 2012, or is repealed by President Bush much earlier, a state could supposedly petition to extend the moratorium off its shores for 5 years, but that requires, under this proposal of Chairman Pombo, that would require repeated actions by the governor and by the state legislature. And even if the state makes that request, the federal government could simply say no, and drilling would begin to take place off California's coast. I know a lot about these proposals because they were introduced in our last few weeks in Congress. We were successful in defeating them, but they are surely going to come back, and we're going to need to address them again. Now, under this current administration, I see this is the scenario which actually would happen. And even if the federal government grants an extension, The protection would only be temporary, perhaps 5 years with one renewal. After that, no more moratorium against new drilling anywhere. So this is what we are left with Mr. Pombo's request, if it were to become law. Just highlight it again. No congressional moratorium on new drilling, a presidential moratorium that can and likely would be withdrawn immediately, no limits on drilling in neighboring states that want to drill, a cumbersome process for states that don't want new drilling that can simply be ignored by the federal government. Doesn't sound like a very strong protection for coastal states to me. And so finally, I strongly encourage this council to support funding for the implementation of the Morro Bay Ecosystem-Based Management Program. This program seeks to bring together, it's a wonderful proposal. It seeks to bring together national and state ocean commission recommendations in order to increase our ability to better understand, utilize, and protect the marine environment. I'm especially pleased that the Marine Interest Group, Cal Poly, and the Morro Bay National Estuary Program are partners in this important project. Thank you again for allowing me to speak to you today and for your attention to my views and the views of my constituents here on the Central Coast. I look forward to continuing to work with this council. I really appreciate what you're about, and you can see from my being here but also my remarks that I'm going to be counting on you with my colleagues in Congress and my presentations and with the governor's support to the administration in supporting proposals that will continue to support our state's rich coastline and ocean life. Thank you very much for your
courtesy. Thank you, Congresswoman. Thank you very much for your leadership in this. We look forward to working with you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
Next, I'd like to call up Meg Caldwell, who's the chair of the California Coastal Commission. Meg, followed by Tom Raftikin.
Thank you so much, Secretary Chrisman, honorable members of the Ocean Protection Council. It's a pleasure to appear before you today. As you know, the California Coastal Commission has a real stake and interest and dedication to almost every issue that comes before you. So I apologize in advance and beg your indulgence, but this will not be the last time I'll be getting up today to address you on the many important issues that you've taken up. I want to just begin, however, with my expression of gratitude on behalf of the entire California Coastal Commission and its staff. First and foremost, for moving ahead aggressively to hire a consultant to work on the issue of long-term, actually permanent funding for the state's coastal and marine protection. We look forward to working with you on this, stand ready to do so, offer all of our services to help you understand the needs from the Coastal Commission's perspective and what we see coming forward as our biggest challenges. And also, we just want to let you know that we do consider this the single most important thing that this state can do to ensure long-term protection for our coastal and marine resources. I also wanted to thank you for weighing in on the federal energy bill. That was incredibly important, and the work that you did with the governor's office and getting the letters out, I think were really effective, and Congresswoman Capps has spoken to the importance of your remaining vigilant on the repeated efforts on the part of the federal government to undermine this state's ability to really undertake its own trustee responsibilities and its legal responsibility, and indeed our moral responsibility to steward our coastal and marine resources for current generations and future generations. Finally, I wanted to just briefly give you an update on the issue of marine plastic debris. And I know you got a fine presentation from the representative from the Coastal Commission, Chris Perry. She's actually the director of our public education program. She, along with Dominic Gregorio from the State Water Board and Steve Assetti from Cal Coast, gave you a fine presentation in September on the critical importance of addressing this problem of marine debris. It's sort of been under the radar screen for this state and every state and the nation as a whole, and kind of the sleeper issue. It could be enormously valuable for this, and I know it will be, for this council to address the problem and to help the rest of the state address the problem. And that just brings me to the point of giving you a brief update. The plastic debris Rivers to Sea project is a joint project between the Algoleta Marine Research Foundation and the Coastal Commission. We have been active in engaging in the first phase of that project and completed a number of things. We completed a research and monitoring component that focused on plastic pellets in the San Gabriel and Los Angeles rivers, and we've been working with industry on the Operation Clean Sweep program. We've brought all the stakeholders on the issue together that we can identify, at least, to discuss potential solutions and how to address them in a constructive way. We've developed an action plan that suggests a combination of public education, increased enforcement, and improved structural controls, and some policy and regulatory changes as well. And we held the first international conference on the issue in September of 2005, which I, too, attended. It was in Redondo Beach. It was enormously successful. Now, the first phase of the project ends in 2006, and we are seeking funding to move on to the second phase of the project. And we'd like to work with your staff to fully fund the ocean, the second phase of the project. We'd be looking to you for some contribution towards the funding towards that second phase, which will include continuing implementation of the action plan that's been developed, providing statewide coordination of the efforts in the action plan by expanding the network that's involved, producing a second Plastic Debris Rivers to Sea conference to follow up on the incredible energy and momentum that was evident at the first conference, and to launch a really strong public education campaign. So with your indulgence, we look forward to working with your staff on that, and you can look forward to receiving a proposal for funding from us. Thank you.
Thanks for the heads up. Appreciate it. Thanks, Meg. Appreciate you being here. Next, Tom Raftikin, United Anglers, followed by Linda Krupp from the Environmental Defense Center. Tom?
Thank you. First of all, I'd also like to welcome the Ocean Protection Council to Santa Barbara. This has been my home for over a quarter of a century, and actually I'm very honored to be speaking after my congresswoman and actually my assemblyman, Pedro Navarro and Congresswoman Capps. Bold leadership. Congresswoman Capps talked about taking bold leadership, and I think it's really incumbent upon you to do that. You really are the first chance for California to take an ecosystem-based approach to the ocean. In particular, when we start looking at the things that affect us recreational anglers, and there are over a million of them in California, we look at fisheries, we also look at habitat issues, and we're also starting to look very deeply at water quality issues. This is a forum that this should be addressed. Currently, there is an effort underway. There's a request to put together an experimental spot prawn bottom trawl fishery in front of the Fish and Game Commission. This is something that just came along, and what really, instead of looking at simply the fisheries issue on this, it's really incumbent upon this body to look at the broader spectrum of things. We need to look at the habitat and how this type of gear affects habitat. We also have to look at really, it's very seriously, it's some water quality issues. I'd ask the Ocean Protection Council to take two actions, but I've also brought two tools for you. First action is I would ask that at your next meeting agendize this particular permit, because it's a chance for you to look at a full approach to this situation. And the other thing is I would ask to send a representative of this council to ask the Fish and Game Commission not to make a ruling on this until after it has been looked at. I know you're looking to put together a science team for the council, and I think this is a great step in the right direction. But until then, I did bring a couple of tools for you. One, you're sitting in the Santa Barbara County Board of Supervisors seats, and coincidentally, I have a proclamation from a resolution from the County of Santa Barbara. And while I won't bore you with the whole thing, I brought you all copies of this so you can read it at your own leisure. Now, therefore, be it hereby ordered and resolved that this Board of Supervisors proclaims to discourage the use of non-sustainable fishing practices such as bottom trawling in the waters surrounding Santa Barbara County. I think that's a pretty impressive statement. Along with that, I've also brought you a copy of Shifting Gears, Pew Science Series. In this, the team that put this together looks not only at the fisheries aspect of gear, but there's destructive nature of certain particular fishing gears. It goes into habitat damage and also that sediment suspension. It really is a very interesting look. It rates fishing gears, and it rates them not only on how effective they are, but bycatch issues and habitat issues. And I think it's interesting to note that midwater trawls, which don't affect the bottom, are rated a 4. Hook and line fishing are really rated below that. 0 being good, 100 being worse. And it goes up, pots and traps 38. At 91 are bottom trawls. At 91 are bottom trawls. Head and shoulders worse than any other gear out there. I know, Secretary Cussman, you were a champion of this when you were on the Fish and Game Commission, and this is something that's coming back into your wheelhouse again. But what I did do is I brought a set of tools for everybody up here. So take a look at this, and we would look for your support.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate that. Appreciate you being here today.
Thank you.
And for your leadership on this stuff. Linda? Crop, followed by Mike Sutton.
Thank you, and welcome to Santa Barbara. Thank you for this opportunity to speak, Secretary Chrisman and members of the Council. This is a very exciting opportunity for us to witness the work and the progress of the Council and also provide you with some of our input and perspectives. So we really appreciate that you meet around the state and open up that opportunity to the public throughout the coastal region of California. I want to make two comments to you wearing two slightly different hats. I am the Chief Counsel of the Environmental Defense Center. I am also the Conservation Representative on the Channel Islands National Marine Sanctuary Advisory Council. And in that role, I lead a group of 13 environmental organizations that comprise the Conservation Working Group, and we provide input to the sanctuary on ocean and marine protection issues. One of the projects that we've taken on is to sequentially study different high-priority issues that have been identified by the Sanctuary Program and Advisory Council and that also affect state water resources as well. And I brought a gift for you as well. We've completed 2 of our reports so far, and these involve assessments of where we are, what are the threats to the marine environment, what's happening now either through regulatory programs or through the public sector, and what can we do. So we have a series of recommendations that the sanctuary is looking at. Many of them involve partnering with other entities such as the state of California. So this is highly relevant to your work. The first report is on noise pollution, and the second report is on water quality. So I will provide this to your staff. And we look forward to working with you on those issues. Our current research now is on open ocean aquaculture, so we should have a report on that later this year. Wearing my EDC Chief Counsel hat, I want to focus briefly on energy issues facing the coast, and we've heard about the participation of this council, and we do appreciate your steadfast opposition to lifting the oil moratorium and your support in opposing future oil and gas leasing. The Environmental Defense Center represents local, state, and national environmental organizations in a long effort involving 2 separate lawsuits to block development of the 37 federal oil leases, and we've been successful to date. We're in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals right now on that issue. I want to point out that the state also has oil leases, and this was part of our conversation with Paul Fair yesterday. There are 6 projects proposed right now in state waters. 2 of them would involve either extending or issuing a new lease. The state has not issued a lease since prior to 1969. So these are going to be coming forward this year. I think all but 1 have complete applications that are going through the process. So just as we look further offshore, it's really important that we protect our nearshore waters from new oil and gas development and leasing. I also want to mention LNG, liquefied natural gas, which is really the new wave of development by the oil and gas industry. And if you've seen Syriana, you'll get that picture. And I encourage everybody to see that movie. Once again, we're looking at a foreign supply of energy, a fossil fuel, tremendous contributor to climate change, tremendous local impacts in terms of safety, air quality, and water quality. The project offshore Oxnard would be the largest air polluter for the county of Ventura and possibly a significant polluter for the county of LA as well. We have been trying to get the state of California to look at whether or not we even need LNG. No one has done that yet. And so whatever this council can do to help us look at that issue, look at the California Energy Action Plan, which puts conservation and efficiency first, then renewables, then distribution efficiency. Fossil fuels are at the bottom. We need your help to find out whether or not, and we believe this is true, that alternatives are available to meet our state's energy need. And we know that the governor is working hard on that issue, but we need to have better public disclosure because right now no one is looking at that on a comprehensive basis. The first project that comes to the finish line may be the only project. It may not be the best project. No one is looking at whether we need LNG, and if we do, what would be the best project. So please support us in that effort. And finally, as Coastal Commission Chair Mae Caldwell mentioned, the state's role in these issues is really important, and the way we have that role is through the Coastal Zone Management Act for both the oil leases and the LNG issue. We need to fund the Coastal Commission so they can do that review adequately and protect our coast. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Linda. Nice having you with us.
Certainly.
Yeah, I want to thank Ms. Kropp and EDC for their leadership on these critical issues to our communities. At the 35th Assembly District and the Oxnard portion of it is the target. Did I say that? The target for one of the LNG proposals. And there's a great deal of opposition, and I think they are a great deal of apprehension, and anything less than a complete and thorough review of all the alternatives would not serve the community well, and neither would I believe would serve the people of the state of California well. So thank you for bringing that to our attention.
Thank you. Bill?
Just a quick request for the last speaker. Could you, maybe not now, but later today, provide me with the information about the six facilities proposed in state waters and the permitting agencies and the whole pack? Okay, thank you.
Bill's on it here. Yes. Okay. Mike Sutton, Monterey Bay Aquarium. Nice having you with us, Michael.
Morning, Mr. Secretary and members of the committee. Thank you for putting the public comment session so early in the agenda today. And I particularly want to congratulate you on your focus on ecosystem-based management, something that is a concept that is rapidly evolving in the scientific community. The aquarium is one of three principles in a partnership called COMPASS, which stands for Communications Partnership for Science of the Sea. The other two principles are CWEB, the public relations firm for the oceans, and a group of leading marine scientists. Last month, COMPASS sponsored a conference, a major scientific conference, on ecosystem-based management of the marine environment in Monterey. More than 130 leading scientists attended that conference, and I hope to send you a summary of the findings shortly. During that conference, representatives from the three West Coast states, Oregon, Washington, and California, were present. We took advantage of that opportunity to convene a small informal meeting of members of the representatives from those three states to discuss the possibility of forming a tri-state initiative or regional agreement on the oceans. Now, the model for this would be the 2003 regional agreement on global warming that was signed by the three governors, including Governor Schwarzenegger, and that really began to move that agenda, not just at the three among the three states, but at the federal level. It's no secret that today we're seeing more action by far on ocean issues at the state level than we are at the federal level. And I hope that we can have your support in due course for a tri-state agreement on the oceans. I want to stress that this is just in the idea stage. It's in the concept stage at this point. But there is precedent for this. My understanding is that the five coastal states in the Gulf of Mexico are preparing to announce a regional agreement on ocean conservation of their own. And we'd like to see California, Oregon, and Washington follow suit. The good news is that we don't have to start from scratch. We've got the two reports of the two ocean commissions and the work of the Joint Ocean Commission Initiative led by Admiral Watkins and Leon Panetta to work with. We've also got the letters written by the three governors to the U.S. Commission on Ocean Policy commenting on their draft report. And so we've taken the first step of drawing together a document that summarizes the positions of the three states with respect to the U.S. Commission report as kind of a springboard from which we might launch a tri-state agreement on the oceans. So I'd encourage you to support that process and throw your weight behind it. Thank you.
Michael, you, it's really a commitment that we made in our conversations with Mr. Connaughton at CEQ at the federal level, and with Admiral Watkins, and with Admiral Watkins and Leon Panetta's help and others to try to show some leadership on a regional basis. And what we're trying to do by doing that, hopefully we can build a fire under the national effort. And by leadership coming from the regions, we think we can accomplish that. We really appreciate your help in getting us there, using the aquarium and other folks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Really appreciate it. Next is David Nelson. David, I can't tell from the speaker card whether you want to speak on an agenda item or you want to speak in the public hearing process. I can't tell what
you want. No, I will be speaking on the agenda item.
Okay,
later.
That's fine.
I just wanted a public comment to thank you for being here and thank you for the job that you're trying to do for our oceans and the coastal waters. I agree with all the speakers up here on offshore oil. I'm a citizen of California for a long time, and I've been working for the last 6 years to try to preserve some of our, what I believe to be priceless. And I just wanted to share with you a couple of little things that I've discovered as a citizen trying to save priceless resources in our state. What we come up against are many agencies that are in charge of taking care of certain properties. What they come up against are rules and regulations that are very hard to interpret, and it costs a lot of money. And what I've seen is that people that want to use these resources to make money have all kinds of money to tell the regulators how they should do their job. And people who want to preserve and protect these resources don't have the same kind of resources to use. So I'm really excited that these types of committees are willing to step up and fund research that will hinder people from destroying assets that cannot be replaced. I mean, we talk about mitigation and replacing resources, but that's just not done. It's just being paid for. It's just like buying a resource that shouldn't be sold. So one of the big things that I'm really concerned about is the onset of desalinization on our coast. Everybody's looking at it as a quick fix for water, but I see it as a really devastating system that if every desal plant that has been applied for or is being looked into is put in California, we're going to be in huge trouble. Because we don't have the answers to begin with, the devastation that this brine water that's going to be reintroduced is going to have on the full food chain of the ocean. Nobody really understands what the full chain is, but common sense and our souls should tell us that this is a very important part of how we live and what we should protect. And I think with a committee such as yours, represented by all kinds of people up there, that we have a chance and an opportunity to set up some real scientific knowledge based through funding through whatever sources the state can come up with, because this is what the state's about. We're not the fifth largest economy on earth because we waste of all our resources. It's because we have them and we manage them. And I would really encourage you to look at the list that the previous speaker talked about, and fossil fuel being on the bottom of the list, and, you know, keep that in mind when we're protecting our oceans. So, again, I hope that, you know, when people come in to put in desal plants, you already have a lot of answers for them and give them questions to answer before you give permits or help them do that. Thank you.
David, thank you. Well said. Items, I can't tell again from your speaker card. What item did you want to speak on the Morro Bay project?
Yeah, I'll be talking on the once through cooling.
The once through cooling. All right, thanks. Okay. Next, I'd like to call on Michael McGinnis, followed by Lee Moldenauer.
Welcome to Santa Barbara. I teach at UCSB, and I also act as a consultant here in town. And I wanted to give you, the staff, two reports. in particular. One is a report by the Gaviota Coast Study Group, which was a group of 16 stakeholders who developed a partnership in a collaborative effort to come up with a vision and a number of recommendations for the Gaviota Coast, which is a stretch of 73 miles north of Coal Oil Point up to Point Sal. In the study group effort, roughly 3 years of collaborative effort and biweekly meetings to really focus on watershed-based protection and the rights of landowners. And I think we came up with a really innovative report in a non-governmental setting as a response to the National Seashore debate here in the region. And I wanted to draw your attention to the report. And many of the recommendations that we have in the report are very consistent, I think, with the governor's very progressive ocean and coastal watershed initiatives and goals. And it brings some of those values or goals down to our region. And in some respects, it's a fire that we're trying to set within the county and within the region to begin a more comprehensive approach to coastal watershed planning in this region and in the county. So the title of the report is Respecting Our Heritage, Determining Our Future. And again, roughly 30,000 acres of land is represented in this group, a range of different stakeholders, including myself. So the other thing I wanted to another report I wanted to give to the commission and the council is a report that I have coming out in the journal Futures, which is an international journal that focuses on the future of social and ecological systems. And having worked in the region for roughly 10 or 12 years on both coastal and marine policy and in sciences, I have written up a report that is a rather comprehensive analysis of the Southern California Bight, both the ecology and some of the direction in which we perhaps should be going in terms of marine ecosystem-based planning. And I think in the report, or in this article, you'll find that there's a whole range of things that I think we need to be concerned about in terms of natural history, ecology, biodiversity loss in particular, and ecosystem dynamics. So I wanted to also give you this for your staff. As MLPA turns next year down to Southern California, this might be a good starting block to think about where we might need to go. So thank you for your time. Good luck today.
Thanks for coming today, Michael. We appreciate it. Lee, followed by Gail Oshinko. Hi, Lee.
Mr. Chairman, Secretary Lloyd, Assemblyman Nava, and special greetings to UCSB alum Brian Beard. I'm Lee Maldaver, speaking on behalf of the Coastal Resource Center, Audubon, California, and I believe the Air Advisory District for the local Air Board. And aside from welcoming you here and thanking you for your fine work on behalf of the coast, I would like to reinforce a point that Secretary Lloyd has been making for a number of years, and it's especially true today in this portion of the coastline. A significant and growing part of the pollution inventory on our airshed is from releases of tankers and freighters regularly going up and down the coast, generally just inside the Channel Islands National Park because of the calmer waters, but outside our direct ability to regulate and control. This is an area ripe for partnership and collaboration between the state agencies, such as Secretary Lloyd has been doing for years, the U.S. EPA, and international trade and maritime agencies. This is a challenge that faces the entire West Coast, but I know personally for working with Terry Dressler on the local Air Board that this is an increasing part of our pollution inventory, and of course depending on the currents it goes up or down the coast, inland or along the shore, and it has a potentially adverse impact on marine life as well as humans on the shore. So I hope at some future meeting, when it's again on the agenda, you continue to focus on the ability of the California State Ocean Protection Council to work effectively with our federal delegation and with the State Department. And I was very pleased to see that our very distinguished Congresswoman Lois Capps was here to greet you and to see the beginning of the meeting, because I know she's intimately involved with that. Thank you again.
Thanks, Lee. Thanks for coming. Gail?
Good morning. My name is Gail Oshurenko. Thank you for coming to Santa Barbara. I teach at the University of California, Santa Barbara, for the Bren School of Science and Management and for the Environmental Studies Department, although the undergraduate students come from all different departments. And I especially wanted to thank you for coming because it's so helpful to us. I do assign my students the responsibility to come to some public hearing and get some experience in understanding how the processes work and how they can participate in them.
Do you have some of them here today?
I think I do, think you will see them floating in and out during the day. But what I especially wanted to call your attention to is, as you know, students, especially in the first week of classes, are extremely busy just trying to juggle which classes they're going to take, and they can't always get transportation to come and spend a couple of hours with you. So the ones you don't see are probably watching you on television.
Uh-oh.
Okay. So you have to look like you're paying attention.
All right. We promise. That's right.
The webcasting is what I really wanted to address today. It is absolutely vital for education. We've been able to make use with our students and in our research work of the webcasting that goes on of the Marine Life Protection Act process and of other hearings. The one body that has not had the funding or the ability to provide regular webcasting is the Coastal Commission, and hopefully you'll really support the Coastal Commission, not only for the reasons that Linda Kropp raised, which are really vital, but because there are many of us who find it difficult, and sometimes we even get landlocked and have to go by sea to even get out of the state, as happened last year. So this webcasting is very useful. I wanted you to know people are watching, and I've appreciated the ability to watch your earlier meetings on this. We're studying this week and next week ecosystem-based management, and we're looking forward to this body being a really good exemplar of how we're going to move forward to change our structure of governance to really do ecosystem-based management.
Thank you for your working with your students to get them involved in the public policy process. Sometimes it's oftentimes disconcerting to many people who are not involved, but thank you for having them involved, and thank you for getting them involved with us, and we encourage that continued involvement in the work that we do here. I think we have no more, one more public comment? Okay. Right under the wire.
After you? Okay. Yeah.
Is it okay, Sam? We let him speak? Is he okay? All right. Okay, good. All right. We have Chris Moulding from the Channel Islands National Marine Sanctuary. Chris, nice having you with us.
Yes. Thank you, Secretary Christman and members of the council. Couldn't pass up the opportunity to say hello. Welcome to Santa Barbara. And just to mention a couple things. One is that the National Marine Sanctuary of the Channel Islands is an example of a place-based manager of the ocean, where we're working very hard to protect and restore the ecosystem around the Channel Islands. And we've worked with many of you on many issues and will continue to do so. I also wanted to thank Linda Kropp, who's on our Sanctuary Advisory Council, for giving you some of the reports that were developed through the council process. And to note that one of the strengths of the Sanctuary Advisory Council here in the Channel Islands Sanctuary is that it represents quite a broad array of stakeholders, many of whom are in the room, including fishing interests, business interests, tourism interests, conservation, shipping, and industry. And so it's a great forum for dealing with many of the same issues that you're tackling. So when you're looking for the views and interests of this community, the Sanctuary Advisory Council is a great place to get a lot of that information. So again, welcome. We'll be paying attention to many of the agenda items, many of which affect the sanctuary system, such as the mapping initiatives that we often cooperate on and need that information to do our management. And we'll continue to work with the agencies in the state and all the other interests to achieve our goal, which is sound, sustainable management of the sanctuary and the surrounding waters in the Southern California region. So thank you very much, and welcome to Santa Barbara.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for coming. Thanks for your leadership and your partnership activities with us. We really appreciate it. Ellen, a few comments?
Just a few comments. Again, I'm very encouraged to hear as many students are participating. That's clearly what we need as we look to the future. I also appreciate the comments in terms of the shipping offshore and the increased amount of traffic, and so the work there is very, very important, and we need a lot of help. And we're trying to work with the with EPA, but it's coming to a focus as we look at the ports and goods movement task force that Secretary McPeak and I are heading up, and that's a very tough issue, very important for California. I would also say I was encouraged this week that we had somebody come in to see us talking about LNG, whether you like LNG or not, or whether you look at the trade-offs between LNG and coal or not. Obviously, those are some of the issues, but clearly the listing of those, it would be much preferable if we have the conservation, renewables, et cetera. But one of the things that that I heard there was that some of these LNG tankers would actually run on natural gas. And the first time I'd heard that, and that was highly encouraging. So, and in fact, if that can be the case, these very large engines, we can get away from this 30 and 40,000 parts per million sulfur, as well as a lot of toxic compounds coming out of there. To me, that's very encouraging. And lastly, clearly, for us, trying to protect the coastline, the beaches, and the quality of the water, just draw your attention that we're in the final stages of submitting the Climate Action Team report to the governor and the legislature. And there will be two final public hearings. We've extended that because of some requests from various stakeholders to do that. But on January 23rd in Sacramento and January 24th in Los Angeles at the Reagan State Building, we will have meetings on that piece of it. And I think they're both webcast. But I think it's particularly important that the constituents here remind us also, the Climate Action Team, the vulnerability of the coastline, and also the key parts that we need to for all of us working together. And we've had a very good participation from the various members of the governor's cabinet and various boards and departments, so it's worked very well. But draw your attention, particularly some of the students here, that's a key piece as we move along, and it also plays back into what we heard earlier, the leadership in California on the global scene. Again, I think in this one is tremendously stark, and I think we all need to support that.
Thank you, Secretary Lloyd. Appreciate your comments. Any comments and questions before we move on? Again, public comment period is over. Thank you all for your comments and your involvement in what we're doing here today. next on the agenda, item number four, is a report from Brian, excuse me, Brian and Sam on federal and state activities. Brian Baird, state activities.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Might I start out by saying, as an alumni of the Environmental Studies Department at UC Santa Barbara, it's great to be here.
Oh, man.
And I and it goes on.
It does.
When I first came here in 1977, my roommate's Scottish grandfather, Mr. McFarland, welcomed me to the Jewel. And it's always great to return here, I've got to say. Let me tell you about California and the World Ocean 06. This is another one of our international conferences that we're holding on ocean and coastal management. This is going to be held September 17th through September 20th in Long Beach, California. And at the last conference that we had in 02, we had Congresswoman Lois Capps welcome us on the opening evening, and Assemblyman Pedro Nava also was there with us for our 30-year anniversary of the certification of the Coastal Zone Management Act. I want to mention that by the end of January, we're going to have a website set up for this conference, and by the end of January, we'll have the call for presentations for this conference. Give you a feeling for the scale of this, we anticipate about 225 to 250 proposals for papers for the probably six concurrent sessions that we're going to have. And then we'll also have up to five plenary sessions for this conference. This conference has really been a big deal for the state of California. It has brought these issues to the forefront. When we were here in Santa Barbara, we had to start turning people away when the numbers got up over 950 people, which we had thought we would stop at 850 people. So this is a really exciting event, and just watch our website for the announcements. I'd like to mention that we are helping to implement the National Ocean Action Plan through regional research coordination. The Resources Agency has been appointed to the federal state task team for what's called, in typical federal bureaucraties, sort of, the Subcommittee on Integrated Management of Ocean Resources, or SIMON. But what's great about this is we have worked with the states of Oregon and Washington. We've come together with a combined set of basically an inventory of all the research needs statements, including the Information Research and Outreach Statement, which was adopted by this council at our last meeting. And I should say that Information Research and Outreach Statement has gotten national attention. It's been lauded by Admiral James Watkins, the former chair of the U.S. Oceans Commission, and Leon Panetta, the former chair of the Kew Oceans Commission. It really is setting the stage. We're actually going quite a bit faster than the federal government right now. So the big challenge for us is to get them to catch up. I'd like to comment on Mike Sutton's comments on West Coast regional approaches to ocean protection. This is not a new idea. There had been discussions 10, 15 years ago about setting up a three-state compact between the states of Oregon, California, and Washington. But I think a lot has happened now. I think we've got a framework that's been set up by the U.S. Commission on Ocean Policy and by the Pew Oceans Commission and by the work of this council. So I think the time is ripe for looking at this, but we don't want this to be a process in search of things to do. We want the things to do to basically say we need a new process. So what we're going to be doing in the next couple of months is really looking at the issue-driven kinds of things that would make sense for us to put something like this together, and we will be reporting back to the council at the next meeting. Finally, as Secretary Crisman mentioned, I serve as the vice chair to the Coastal States Organization, which is made up of 35 coastal states, territories, and commonwealths. And it's going to be an interesting process, but we are working on revising the strategic plan for that organization. And like some strategic plans, it currently has 67 specific action items, not many of which I or other members can reel off. So what we are doing is we have sent out a survey to all the coastal states, territories, and commonwealths. We're going to try to focus on the top 5 to 10 things that we want to achieve nationally. And instead of going around and talking to our congressional representatives individually, we're going to start having teams made up of the chair and myself as vice chair, our Ocean Policy Committee chair, our Water Quality Committee chair, go and speak to members together. So it really does have some power when you have someone from California, Alabama, Oregon, South Carolina, Delaware, all going as a group saying these are things we need Congress to respond to. So we're very excited about being able to send those messages. We just hope that we have some success. Because I think, people throughout the nation feel that California is clearly one of the leaders in the nation in making these things happen. So I'll turn it over to Sam, who's going to talk about the Marine Life Protection Act.
Sam?
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the council. I thought I would, on the state side, focus on what has been going on with the Marine Life Protection Act Blue Ribbon Task Force. I gave you an update on this at the last meeting. One of the deliverables for the task force was to prepare a comprehensive strategy for long-term funding of planning, management, and enforcement of marine protected areas. The council engaged the services of Tim Gage and Craig Brown, both former and pretty wily directors of finance for the state of California in two different administrations. They have delivered their report to the task force. We actually got a copy of it. And the task force is considering it and will be making some additional recommendations at its first meeting in 2006. As you may recall, you authorized a $50,000 project to study the same topic, but more broadly for all coastal and ocean management issues. And we intend to use the Blue Ribbon Task Force's report as a starting place because they didn't miss much in terms of potential funding sources. So that is out and about. The task force has received a set of packages for marine protected areas from its Central Coast Regional Stakeholder Group, and we'll be considering those alternative packages at its first meeting in this year, and we'll take final action in March. And we'll then send that group of packages to the Fish and Game Commission, where the regular regulatory and departmental process will go into effect. They've also created a joint DFG, National Marine Sanctuary, and NOAA MPA Center working group to address the data coordination needs for creating and monitoring marine protected areas. And that was another one of the task force's deliverables. Task force, as you probably know, has a science advisory team, and a subgroup of that team has been at work evaluating the proposed network packages, and their evaluation is going to the full science group at their first meeting in January. So the scientific review of the packages is proceeding in parallel. And we are fortunate to have with us a member of the Blue Ribbon Task Force, Meg Caldwell. So I want to see if Meg has anything she wants to add to that report.
I did tell you I was going to do this.
He did. He warned me. So I just wanted to state a couple of things. First, I neglected to say this during my opening remarks, but on behalf of both the California Coastal Commission as a member of the task force for the MLPA, I just strongly support all of the ecosystem-based management programs that you're considering today. I think they're vitally important, and we've learned so much through the MLPA process how important it is to take a broader ecosystem-based perspective, but we've also realized that the scientific community has really stepped up to the plate, and they, too, are prepared to assist policymakers in understanding how to go about that. So the time is right, and I encourage you to move forward with that. The second point that I hadn't planned to make was just one that was raised by Professor Osherenko, and that is the critical importance of the webcasting. I've always considered myself camera phobic, so it's not because I particularly want to be on any camera, but I know that it has been vital to the participation of Californians up and down the state to have the webcasting, particularly for the MLPA process. It's such a stakeholder-driven process, and we've heard from scores of people up and down the state and professors and instructors that it's been incredibly useful. So I just want to thank anyone in the room who's been involved in making that happen, and Steve and his gang for doing such a great job. And I actually would like to bring that same technology to the Coastal Commission, but as Gail pointed out, we simply don't have the funding for it right now. Thank you.
Meg, thanks for your leadership on the MLPA task force. I mean, Blue Ribbon task force. I mean, given all that you're doing for us on the Coastal Commission task force, we appreciate it. Thanks.
Speaking of webcasting, we do have a contract with AGP Video. So for about $25,000, all of your meetings will be not only webcast, but also recorded permanently on DVD. And I recently learned, this is a hint, that the Fish and Game Commission, which AGP Video has been broadcasting, recently voted to make the DVD the official record of the meeting, with one copy going to the state archives and one copy staying at the Fish and Game office. So just something to think about. Normally, I would use this time to talk about things that are going on in the state legislature. The legislature just reconvened. I don't have anything to tell you that you haven't read in the newspaper, but I anticipate at the next meeting that I'll have more for this report. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Sam. Yes, please, Adam. Any questions?
Just one question, since this obviously seems a point of interest. How much does it cost, would it cost, for Meg to webcast the Coastal Commission meetings?
The commission, as you know, meets almost every month and meets for 3 days. So that would be a significantly larger contract, because the contract that we have with AGP includes all of the equipment and the crew traveling to wherever we are and being here as long as we are here. So I don't know offhand. Did you remember what
But on the other hand, if it's 3 days at one place, it's less expensive than three times one day.
Yeah, but it's like 10 meetings a year, too, is the duration. Yeah. Also, the commission meetings have a history of going late into the night.
Forever. That's right.
Do you remember what the bid was?
Actually, the source is right here, but we did go till 10:30 on Wednesday night. Steve, do you recall what the bid, since your group, under 120 per year? Okay. And I think currently our costs are around $30,000 to $40,000 for de minimis AV assistance, not including things like overhead machines.
So per meeting per day?
Oh, I don't know how it breaks down per meeting per day, but so the delta is in the range of $60,000 to $70,000.
All right. And you could cover, you would be able to access many million, presumably quite a few, or hundreds of thousands of people.
Absolutely.
And so if you divided the amount by the number of people, it's not really great.
That's well said. I have to comment. Sam and I were on the Fish and Game Commission when we first started this webcasting, and it started it kind of as a test to see what kind of interest was going to be out there, to see if people would actually pay attention to the commission meetings and their proceedings. And the response was unbelievable. I mean, and so it's been, you know, and now with the MLPA Task Force and the Ocean Protection Council, I mean, it's becoming an accepted way to, you know, get people involved. I mean, we constantly, those of us in public policy decision making, in the public policy decision making arena, constantly talk about the desire to get more people involved in these processes in a substantive sort of way, and I can't think of a better way to get people engaged and to get people energized in the process. So I too am very supportive of these activities. You guys are doing a great job. You really are. Really great job. You don't have to fill a speaker card out. Come on up.
Thanks. Steve Matthew, AGP Video. As you just recounted, we did start with Fish and Game Commission, and oddly enough, it was because I'm from Morro Bay, and there's a serious commercial fishing contingency, among other things, in that neighborhood. There has been a phenomenal response. I could share a whole lot of numbers, but the one that comes to my head immediately is I just put a hit counter on my own smallest site, which is slowspan.org. Which I carry all of this on, and then I also am running all of the statewide stuff on calspan.org. And I put a hit counter on January 31st last year. I have had over 20,000 hits in a year on a little unknown website to look at these meetings.
Not so unknown anymore.
No, it's not a little anymore. It's almost scary. It's like that commercial where, now, you know, they open the web-based
that's
business.
Right. That's right.
So I've got bids in. If we can get funding, I know I can do this, you know, cheaper than anybody else. I'm doing it as a labor of love more than anybody else.
Hey, you're pitching the choir here. That's okay. Good job. That's right. And my card's in the back of the room. That's right. Good. Oh. That's right. That's right. I think it probably is. That's right. That's right. All right. Thanks. Next on the agenda is a report. We've got a couple of issues that I think are important to the future of the Ocean Protection Council. One is the hiring of a full-time executive officer for the commission, the council, and getting a science advisor and a science advisory team in place. Let me, before I turn it over to Brian to talk about these two activities, let me talk a little bit about, if I might, the executive officer's position. What we're talking about, again, as I said earlier, this council is kind of a work in progress, and so with the work, the very good work of the Coastal Conservancy and Brian and our staff at the Resources Agency and many of you in the room, we've come this far, and so the idea of an executive officer is very high, a full-time executive officer is very high on our radar screen, because essentially what we want here is somebody who every day
thinks about the work of the Ocean Protection Council, working with the good folks at the Coastal Conservancy and across the board to make this happen. And so you'll hear some conversations about that. You'll hear some conversations about the team and the science advisor. So I'll turn it over to Brian to talk a little bit more in depth about it. Brian?
Thank you. Basically, I'm just going to talk about the logistics and where we are with this. We are nearly ready to create the executive officer position and to advertise it as an exempt position at the Resources Agency. And for someone who works in this field, I got to tell you, these kind of opportunities don't come along very often, and I think this is a really amazing one. This person would assume the lead, that policy role and kind of coordination role for the policy aspects for the council. So we anticipate getting an announcement out hopefully within the next 2 weeks, and we are going to very widely distribute this this announcement. So I think we've got a 3,300-person contact through the Internet for the council. But what I hope will happen is, as always happens, the sanctuary programs will start sending it to people, and I'll send it to the Coastal States Organization. It'll go to all 35 states, territories, and commonwealths. It's going to go all over the place. This is a very, very important position. I hope all council members are going to assist us on this. And this position would be located in Sacramento. Do you want to speak on this? Or? Yeah.
I just had a question before you get off that. What's the salary range?
Are you going to apply?
Oh, come on, Alan.
I think people would be interested.
Ah, okay.
I don't think it has been finally set, but I would say that it's going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $100,000 with benefits in addition. So I think it's a very good opportunity for someone who wants to get into this. And I sound like the advertisement we just got from the media folks, but I think we're driving the train right now, and so this would be quite a position for someone.
Let me further add that we want to make sure that this is prospectus will be disseminated nationally and even internationally, and we want a significant outreach to this. So need to help us, if you will. We haven't quite decided on are we going to hire a search team yet. We're going to try this first and see how it happens. Bill?
Yeah, I have a question about this. Not that I'm trying to slow down creating another job, but the existing statute for the Ocean Protection Council says that under your direction that the Coastal Conservancy should provide staffing services
right.
to the council. And I would just like to...
That won't change, Bill. That won't change. And this person we envision as being a person actually working in our office, working directly with me, as chair of the council, and whoever follows me in this role. So, I mean, quite frankly, that relationship with the Conservancy is not going to change. In fact, I think it's going to be enhanced, because what we're going to have is we're going to have somebody who has actually focused on the council every single day. So that's the reason behind it.
Okay. Just a suggestion, perhaps.
Please. Yeah, please.
I'm not sure that a lot of legislators who were involved in the development of the Ocean Protection Council statute
mm-hmm.
looked at it that way. I mean, looked at it as...
It's news to me. Looked at it what way?
I mean, I think there was some idea that the Conservancy would provide staffing services exclusively.
Don't agree.
Well,
yeah.
I'm not, like I say, I'm not locked in here on this, but I've heard discussions that this is going to, we need to have a more complete discussion about it.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay.
That's fine. Now, again, it's not going to change anything. Anything in terms of the statute, anything in terms of the relationship or the working relationship with the Coastal Conservancy at all. It isn't intended to do that. In fact, it's intended to make it work better. Work that whole process better is what it's about. Alan?
Yeah, I strongly support you, Secretary. I think that this is a bold step, and any time we can make this more effective, we stated a couple of meetings ago with support from the outside. If this is to be important, it's a worldwide opportunity here. We want to get the very best people, both in the management sense and the technical sense. And I understand Mr. Craven's point there with the legislature, and I know too well how important working with the legislature, but I can't imagine when this is fully explained that anybody would stand in the way of making it more effective, and we have a huge opportunity. So I'd like to compliment the staff on a bold initiative of identifying the need for very targeted resources with, I think, a huge opportunity. And as we've heard today, working with both the private community, state community, and the university community, this has a tendency to be, well, has a potential to be really a huge success. And we cannot, this has to be on the front burner.
That's right. Paul, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on the same issue. I've been personally very supportive of the council having its own staff. I think Sam Shook and the Conservancy have done a fabulous job, but it's really not fair to them to have to staff two different, you know, entities as they've had to do, and I know this has taken probably a lot more time than they originally thought it would, so I think it's appropriate for the burden to be taken off of them, as well as having staff that are specifically dedicated to what this council is doing. I do think that there potentially is, you know, a statutory issue here that Bill Craven's identified here, and that there is a certain approach that's specified in the statute and something we might want to look at from a technical perspective. I'm in favor of the goal that you're after. But the other question that's kind of raised both indirectly by what Bill said is who does this staff person report to?
Reports to me. As chair of the council, and actually as chair of the council, but the entire council, actually working out of our office.
And I guess that's the question. I mean, Sam and I both report to particular boards.
Right.
And is this person a deputy secretary of resources, or is this person?
This person is an executive officer of the California Ocean Protection Council.
So then, presumably, the hiring is done by the council.
Of course.
And it's a council decision. And
absolutely.
Reports to the council.
Absolutely. But in terms of direct reports to the chair, as oftentimes your relationship is with your chair.
Sure.
that we contemplated that as the ongoing how it would operate.
Okay, well, I guess that needs to be spelled out in some fashion or another.
It will be. Definitely spelled out.
Okay. Good. Well, I'm in agreement with the direction, which, again, is
sure,
the
council. Sure, I hear you. These are all good questions. All very good questions.
Great.
Okay. Other comments or thoughts? Okay.
I should do the other part.
Sure.
And then the other position is the science advisor to the trust. And the science advisor position, as we are crafting this, would be a shared position with the California Ocean Science Trust, which was created by legislation by then-Assemblyman Fred Keeley. What we're thinking is California Ocean Science Trust was established to be an entity that would help translate science to management. And it has representatives from industry and academia, state agencies, and nonprofits. And so what we've decided to do, and they've offered their services to help us with this translation of science to management. So we have worked out a co-funding arrangement where they would provide 50% of the funding for this individual. We would provide 50% of the funding for this individual, who would serve as the executive director of that organization and the science advisor to the council. The trust would play a key role in what has been discussed here, setting up a science advisory panel. What we want to do is have the California Ocean Science Trust play the role of helping us solicit the individuals for that advisory council, helping us deal with the interviews and all the structural issues with bringing those people on, and then also being our entity that would work for us in setting up meetings of this advisory board and doing all of the logistics that are necessary for this kind of arrangement. What's great about it is we're building on an existing entity that we just think makes a lot of sense. And again, this position is currently scheduled to be advertised probably in the next 2 weeks. And this would be a contract position. And the current thinking is that we would advertise it as a contract without benefits. It would be $100,000 to $120,000 is what that'll be put out for. And again, we really need your help in trying to bring the best and the brightest to come and apply for this position. That concludes my comments.
Okay. Other comments or questions? Anybody? Okay.
No.
Okay.
I would weigh in strongly with the last, the science advisor as well. I think putting science right at the forefront and then looking internationally for someone like this would be critical. Also, like the idea of a contract, because then you can get some other funding.
What?
and you know, people know what they're up against, what they're going to do, without any long-term commitment. And if it doesn't work out, then you don't have people. You can move people along, or you can have visiting scientists there, opportunities.
Good, Alan. Thanks. Thank you. It was just pointed out to me, I'm sorry about this, Meg, you had a card in here for the last item to talk about, I guess, some federal legislation. Apologize. Come on up. Thanks.
Well, actually, because I don't have enough to do, I was thinking of applying for that job, and I'm sure my current employer wouldn't mind.
Okay.
Thank you so much. The Coastal Commission would like to bring your attention and request your action on two federal activities that we believe directly affect the state's ability to adequately and appropriately govern and steward our coastal and marine resources. The first is pending legislation sponsored by Senator Domenici that would subsidize private exploitation of our state's marine resources. And specifically, I'm talking about legislation that would subsidize private development of desalination plants. We believe it's entirely appropriate for the federal government to consider economic support for public desalination facilities, but the Commission is opposed to subsidizing private exploitation of our public marine and coastal resources. We understand that careful consideration and placement of desalination facilities is a state priority. However, we're concerned that public subsidies for private facilities will place tremendous pressure on the Coastal Commission to approve more private desalination plants, which together with the public desalination plants that we know are in the application pipeline can have significant cumulative effects on our coastal and marine resources. The second piece of federal legislation that I wanted to bring your attention to, well, actually federal activity, is in relation to the Federal Energy Act. Now, this gives the Federal Marine Minerals Service authority to regulate alternative energy on the Outer Continental Shelf and the conversion of existing offshore facilities to other uses. We believe that this new authority has the potential to significantly undermine and supplant our state's ability to review and regulate rigs to reefs and liquefied natural gas facilities. Now, presently, the Marine Minerals Service is publishing advance notice of rulemaking, which is essentially a scoping of what will be part of a final rulemaking on this issue. We would ask that the Ocean Protection Council take a central role in the state's formal response to the proposed federal policies and regulations. Thank you.
Yes. With those requests, can we outline, you know, how it is that we're going to make a decision about the position, and if we're going to take a position? In my experience with the Coastal Commission, and maybe Chair Caldwell has some numbers, because you make reference to the many proposed desal plants and the numbers that are already in the pipeline and the numbers that people are contemplating. Do you have some sense about what that is? How many there are?
At one time there were 28. We have two dozen now.
Right. And this is a really important issue because you have to evaluate whether or not the need for the desal plant and its potential to induce growth into areas that tax other resources. So that's something I really do think we ought to take a serious look at. I want to thank her for bringing that. And I think the Federal Energy Act issue should be relatively straightforward for us. We've been pretty clear on how we feel about the federal government usurping California's ability to protect ourselves, but they just keep coming back. It's like the scene in The Godfather, they bring me back. And so I'm just kind of curious as to how it is we're going to go about that on both of those issues.
Again, that's why we have this on our agenda each month. I mean, clearly, we've been very clear on these issues as they come back. I mean, we'll come to the council if we think that there's a letter, personal contacts are important, we'll make sure that's the case. I mean, but in terms of the desal conversation, as we move forward, we're gonna probably want to take some time to kind of study the issue. For us, in the administration, we've indicated early on that we think desal properly placed, properly you know, properly licensed in California, given all the regulations we've got. It should be probably a part of our water supply future. We've got a long ways to go. And what we're suggesting is, from a policy perspective, is a close look at some of the new science and kind of take a look at it. Pedro brings up a good point about, you know, where they're located and the growth-inducing impacts and all the other things that come a part of that. And so we're all going to have to be a part of those conversations as they are proposed, as specific plants are proposed, specific issues are raised. So, I mean, I quite frankly think it will, for us, will be continue to be on our radar screens. Please.
I'd just like to comment on one other issue, and that's the Coastal Zone Management Act issues that have come up with the new regulations that have come out. And my understanding, the Commission staff has looked at those changes and have felt that there's some very serious concerns. And so I have asked the staff to let us know as soon as possible as to whether they think the council ought to intervene or the governor ought to intervene or I mean, because the regulations are out, but do we want to go on record and do we want to look to the future on what this means for California and other states?
Thank you. Mr. Barrett, I think that the Commission would encourage the Ocean Protection Council to work in conjunction with the governor to provide formal comments on that proposed rulemaking, and we stand ready to work with you on those. On the desal, Secretary Chrisman, the issue that I brought up today is the whole issue of public subsidies for private desalination plants and the degree to which that may compromise or not compromise our state's ability to regulate and actually approve those plants.
Sure.
That's the issue that I wanted to bring up to you.
Okay, I understand better now. Okay. Thank you.
If
thanks,
I might,
Meg. I appreciate that.
If I might, Chair Caldwell, if you'll get in touch with my staff, that sounds like an appropriate issue that I can take to the Environmental Caucus in the legislature.
Good. Thank you. Okay. Any other questions or comments on item 5? Okay. Item 6, Strategic Plan Work Program. Neil Fishman. Neil?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the Council. I'm here to introduce you to our process for developing a 5-year strategic plan for the Council. A 5-year plan is called for in the COPA legislation. It says the Council shall develop a 5-year strategy plan to improve protection, management, and restoration of California's ocean and coastal ecosystems for their intrinsic value and for the benefit of current and future generations. That's a pretty tall order. It's all-encompassing, and today we're not asking you to begin to dissect anything we've put before you, but more to look at the process we intend to go about in tackling that. We intend to identify and prioritize the most important issues in ocean and coastal protection for the next 5 years. And we will look at the most efficient ways to address these issues and various funding possibilities to go over to address issues, both in governance and in stewardship. This is going to be an unusual process because the Ocean Protection Council is it doesn't have a lot of staff. It doesn't have programs to develop things, but it is working with a whole lot of other agencies. So we'll be looking at agencies throughout state government as well as in other parts of government to see what we can do, what the Council should be doing in the next 5 years to assist all of these different programs and to gain resources for all of these programs. We'll be looking at stewardship issues, meaning restoration and resources and management, governance issues, research, education, and technology development, economic issues relating to the coast, and funding issues. We have a draft set of issues in front of you, and I mean that as these are draft issues, and these were not intended for your discussion as to whether one should be in one category or the other category, or which is a goal and which is an objective. We'll struggle with all of those issues as we go along, as you always do with a strategic plan. But we will be looking at living marine resource management issues, habitat management, water quality and human ecosystem health issues, physical and abiotic processes, technology issues, and economic uses of the ocean and coast. In order to do all of this, we intend in the next 2 months to meet with a lot of different stakeholder groups, as well as agency officials and all of you. And we would request that you make some time available to us just so that we can sit down with you. We have hired the services of the Center for Collaborative Policy at Cal State, and to set up meetings and to help work with groups to understand what the different organizations and individuals would like to see in this plan.
Neil, talk a little bit about the group at Sacramento State. Talk about that Center for Collaborative
Policy. Center for Collaborative Policy is a group that we have used and are using now on the South Bay Salt Pond issue, a large restoration program. They provide mediation services, in effect, or facilitation services. We bring them along to all of our meetings at South Bay Salt Pond so that different organizations can be heard, and that meetings are run smoothly, and that all of the different positions can be gotten and understood by all the parties. And that's a key thing, is that we're working in the same terminology. Everybody understands what we're about, and the document is bought into by the different parties. Unfortunately, Mary Selkirk, the first of our wounded today, we have a number of people who were going to be here today, but who either had canceled flights or are ill, is not here today to talk about the center. Okay. But in general, the meeting that will be the most discussion of this group will be in April. We will be working again for the next month and a half to 2 months in filling out what you have in front of you, which in fact has already been evolving just since we sent it out to you a couple of weeks ago. We've been working in our office, filling in the blanks and expanding the template for the different strategic actions that this council should take. And we think at the end of this process there will be a roadmap that will be quite extensive and have a lot of different actions by a lot of different agencies that this council can help to bring about, both by supporting different new policy initiatives as well as providing funding when it's available, or setting out a framework for supporting these initiatives over time. And I think the funding study that we're working on will fit into this, as well as a number of other activities that are ongoing. So I'll leave it at that and see if you have any questions or if there is any public comment.
Yeah, we do have some requests for public comments. Bill, please. You turn on your mic there, wouldn't you?
Is there a role in the thought process here to include the council's science advisory team, and is that one of the identified stakeholders, or how do we make sure that this process is going to reflect top-notch scientific input?
Well, it's a good question. I think that the science advisory team probably will not be put together in the time frame. So I think that we will be seeking out scientists from a lot of different disciplines. For instance, Coastal America, the federal partnership, will be a key informant, as will the staff of the Department of Fish and Game, on a lot of these different issues. In fact, Paul Michel from U.S. EPA is here today to lend support to this effort. They have offered their services to put together top scientists from different federal disciplines to make sure that we have that perspective, and we will seek other perspectives as well.
And we'll do that early on in the process.
We will.
I think that's an excellent question.
And kind of a similar question is, identifying the stakeholders who might be interested in this process seems to me to be a little daunting, because there are going to be hundreds of groups and thousands of individuals who are going to who consider themselves to be stakeholders. Is there a process to actually list or identify stakeholders?
That process is ongoing now. We are putting together lists of stakeholders, and you know, but we're happy to show you those lists as they are developed, and we'll take your suggestions for others.
I'd even suggest posting them.
Well, this will all be posted on the web. I mean, this document will be on the web, but what the process that we're going to be going through, and as we add, there'll be, I presume, workshops that we're going to put together as a part of this process, public outreach sessions that we're going to be asking people for involvement, and so the intention is to be very, very inclusive and open, and as broad-based as we possibly can. Bill, these are very daunting tasks. You're absolutely right. Good questions to ask.
And while the draft, I think, you know, captures numerous categories of issues that I definitely agree should be included, I'm wondering what the plan is as this document becomes closer to final. Do you anticipate that it's going to be very specific in terms of projects that we could do, or the funding sources that will accompany that? I mean, is it going to be kind of generic, or are we going to really see?
I think it will be somewhere in between generic and project specific. To actually identify specific projects is probably too wide a scale for this. But to identify outcomes that have a number of projects associated with them will be here. We will try to identify funding sources, or at least potential costs of a range of outcomes. And if you've seen the Coastal Conservancy Strategic Plan, it's modeled in that way. It's been an effective document, but it doesn't spell out specific projects. But it does say, here are our goals, and these are specific outcomes. This is what they may cost. Here are strategies that we can take to reach those outcomes.
Well, can we get specific enough on what we would anticipate each state department or board or commission to do?
Perhaps. I'm not sure. I think that we will be looking at different state departments and commissions, and there will be a number of items that will say potential lead agencies could include these departments. I'm not sure we'll always identify a specific action with a specific department.
Okay.
Could I say, I think that's going to be part of the strategic goals of this as well. It may be in certain areas it's confusing, and part of the strategic approach is we got to figure that out, and that's part of what needs to be done.
Sam, you had something to say.
Yeah, I wanted to chime in. I think to further answer one of Bill's questions, the Coastal Conservancy, our strategic plan is a document that when our board gets a project, we are able to tell them this project helps to satisfy this objective number in the strategic plan. So I think what we're thinking of is because as it stands now, when we give you projects here, you know, we tell you why we think this is a good project. So what it would mean is that in the future, the projects would actually identify the chapter and verse in this your strategic plan that they are intended to advance. And that's the level of, we want to get to a level of detail so that we can then do that with you all. The other comment I wanted to make is that we are not, in fact, starting in a planning vacuum. We have two national reports. We have a governor's action plan. We have a number of processes underway which, in fact, will undoubtedly become pieces of this plan, for instance, the funding study that we're doing, the work that the Blue Ribbon Task Force has been doing. So there are both contextual documents that we will draw on, and there are also underway actual pieces of things that will find their way into the plan. So we're not we're not starting really from zero, which is fortunate since we have to deliver you a product at your June meeting.
Can I add something?
Yeah. Sure, please.
Yeah, I'm pleased to heard that part of it, because as I look at the projects that we're funding, I have a faith that that's the direction that we're going. But now I've also heard participated in a number of hearings on emergency services, and was upset to learn that we've spent about $800 million in federal Homeland Security monies without this kind of matrix plan. And so I'm very pleased to see that what we're doing is coming up with those kinds of priorities, what issue areas they satisfy, so that we can check the boxes to make sure that the money that we're spending is going to go into this kind of ecosystem preservation, restoration targeted projects. Thank you.
I think that's excellent. The other thing I'd like to do as part of this process as we go through and develop our strategic plan, I think it's important for us to maybe on an annual basis to kind of spend a little bit of time at one of the meetings and talking about how we're doing and meeting those goals and objectives that we've laid out over a five-year period to make sure we're tracking it and get public comment on how we're doing. Because these documents have got to be dynamic and got to be able to change over time. So.
And again, that's something I do with our strategic plan at the Coastal Conservancy every year. I tell them, here's your strategic plan, here's the progress we've made towards each objective. I have a little bar chart that lets them sort of visually see how they're doing on a percentage basis. And it also allows me in managing the Coastal Conservancy to see at the end of the year, we didn't make enough progress on the coastal trail this year. We probably move a little money over there and some people, and but we've maybe done enough land acquisition in this area. Well, there's never enough land acquisition, but so we are able to use it that way.
Okay. Paul?
A couple of comments. I wanted to echo the one that you just made, which is that at the end of the day, we want to have these goals and objectives that we're moving for. And, that's a key part of any strategic plan. But in looking at this... But in looking at this outline, it talks a lot more about issues and not about kind of setting these goals and objectives. And I'm presuming that as we move forward the strategic plan, although there's an absence of mention of it here, that there's going to be some visioning going on so that we have a mission statement, a vision statement, that kind of thing. These are translated into goals and objectives and eventually performance standards, because right now this document mostly talks about what the issues are that we have to confront. And I'd like to see, obviously, in a strategic plan, you have to make the next step up and go from issues to, okay, how are we going to address this and what is our intent? What are our goals?
That is our intent. And this is a very skeletal outline now, and we are already internally starting to fill in the blanks and come up with those specific goal statements as well as objectives and strategies. And that is what we will be asking the people that we go to in public hearings and in focus groups and you to help us do.
Two other points, if I may. Along those lines, I presume that, again, in this document, which is just a first draft, you refer to the Ocean Protection Council mission. I presume that that mission is only, as described here, is only with respect to the strategic planning process, because I don't see our mission is to develop a plan. It's to do what the plan's supposed to do, which is to protect, improve, blah, blah, blah. That kind of thing.
This is not the mission statement for the council.
Okay. The heading was confusing to me. Yeah. And then the final point I wanted to make was to perhaps reiterate some of what Bill had said, that the involvement of stakeholders is vital. And although I note that there are two workshops mentioned in the draft, that I'm sure we'll hear from those stakeholders if they feel that they haven't had the opportunity to make the input that they want to make, and I think it's real important. And this gets back to the twin problems of doing any strategic planning. One is to get it done in time so it can guide all of our decisions that we're making, as the Assemblyman mentioned, right now without the benefit of that planning. But the second side of that is to make sure we do it right and we get the involvement. And I'm glad I'm not you, Neil, in terms of having to make that balance. But it's something that we may need to revisit in terms of the schedule to see whether or not it's very, very ambitious as to whether or not we need more time.
Well, that's always open. Yep. And again, I my view, and I've said it once, and I think you probably all agree, my view of these plans is they're dynamic, they're forever evolving and changing, and that's why a continual kind of look back on how we're doing and measuring our process on a continuing basis and adjusting where we need to adjust over time, I think is really important as a part of this. So that's all very good comments. Other questions or comments?
Before I go to the public part of this, we've got a number of folks who want to speak to this. I'm told in the back of the room that the University of California, Santa Barbara Chancellor, Dr. Yang, has stepped into the room. And Dr. Yang, we're nice to have you with us today. If you'd like to say anything, you're welcome to, or you just like to listen, you're welcome to do that too. But thank you for coming. Okay, great. Nice having you with us today. Thank you for taking time out of your schedule to come visit us. Okay, we have a number of folks. Neil, thank you very much. Good report. We have a number of folks who have expressed an interest in commenting on this agenda item. First is Paul Michel, US EPA Region 9, followed by Al Wanger from the Coastal Commission.
Secretary Christman, council members, good to be here. On behalf of the Southwest team of Coastal America, I want to convey our support and interest in the council's strategic planning effort. And we view this as a primary way to identify the key areas for federal-state collaboration. Already, as you may know, the Southwest team and resource agency and conservancy staff have drafted a proposal, a partnership proposal, that identifies some of the key areas for collaboration. We'll continue to work on that. We'll continue to work with your staff through the next 6 months on the strategic planning effort. As I looked at the five priority areas on today's agenda, I just couldn't help but notice that all of those have obvious interest and priority for the key federal agencies that are part of the Coastal America Partnership. We have financial, technical, and policy assistance and resources to bring to bear, although sometimes they pale in comparison to what you have to offer these days. But nevertheless, we are there. I wanted to just highlight for you, too, on that same note, this recent December 2005 Federal Ocean Activities Report to Congress that highlights those programs and assistance and some recent accomplishments. I'll give that to Sam for your interest. Lastly, just a few FYI items. My boss, EPA Regional Administrator Wayne Nashry, will be in Washington next week. He'll attend a White House-level meeting of Coastal America principals. This is the Deputy Assistant Secretary-level folks that meet quarterly with CEQ. He's going to highlight the needs of the regional team here for being a substantive value-added partner with the state. And as an example of what we're trying to do with regional efforts across the country is that there's this need to do more from the federal agencies, but yet the resource issues keep coming up. And so the deputy assistant secretary levels need to be made aware of that. And he's there to try to take the message that for the regional teams to be relevant, they need to have resources to be able to be equal partners. So I want to let you know about that. I'll be reporting back to you about the progress there. So I mentioned a series of regional principal meetings that are occurring around the country. The next one that's occurring is in the Northwest regional principals are meeting on the 27th at the end of this month. And I'm going to be going to that meeting just to follow their progress and to report back to you all the issues that were discussed there. It'll be important because members of the governor's office from Washington and Oregon will be there, along with regional principals, the regional directors of the federal agency, CEQ, Chairman Connaughton, Deputy Secretary Lynn Scarlett will be there to preside. Even our old friend Bill Ruckelshaus will be there to provide some encouraging remarks. So the kind of thing we might think about in the future for trying to do here in California, again, there's just a lot of effort underway to try to re-energize, revitalize the federal agency partnership on coastal and ocean resources. So I just want to leave you with that and hope to have more to say at our next meeting. Thanks.
Great. Paul, thank you. Thank you for being here. Next, Al Wanger, followed by Werner Chabot.
Good morning, Secretary Christman, members of the council. Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to get up and say a few words about this. Development strategic plan. As you know, the Coastal Commission has responsibility and regulatory authority over many of the issues and areas that the council addresses, and it's paramount for us to work closely with you as you develop both a strategic plan and look to implement aspects of your program and mission. Paul Thayer's comment, I want to echo the idea of development of a vision for what the plan is about to give depth and meaning to the types of goals and objectives that you really identify to make sure that they're really setting the course, that that's the guiding star for what you're looking for as you navigate the development of the strategic plan. And I think be so bold as to suggest that it's partly found in the name of the council itself in terms of ocean protection, gives meaning to the stewardship and conservation that is envisioned in the COPA bill. We obviously want to work closely with you during the development process. We want to offer you some ideas about a number of priorities that are currently before the state. The commission is dealing with a number of these, or we see that these are coming quickly on the horizon. Many of these have been identified in your work plan as issues likely to be considered or be evaluated, but we think that there's some that are rather key that need to be retained throughout the process. Just briefly, those are developments affecting the outer continental shelf energy exploration, the changes to the federal consistency legislation was talked about earlier, with potential expansion of alternative energy development offshore is key. Other issues related to non-point source runoff, pollution and impacts to coastal waters, planning for climatic instability and global climate change. How we manage that is going to have a huge effect both on our economy and coastal resources as well. Continuing public education on coast and ocean issues, protection of wetlands, environmentally sensitive habitat areas, marine and tidal resources. That's really captured quite a bit by your ecosystem-based approaches that are being considered, but we want to echo those as being vital. And a couple of other remaining issues, one to be talked about later today, once through cooling. Aquaculture, invasive species control, and marine debris, and also desalination as it affects California. And I just want to reiterate that we recognize that desalination is going to be part of California's water portfolio as we move forward into the future. And we, you know, share the concerns that you addressed earlier about making sure that these are done in an environmentally responsible manner, placed in the right place where they need to be, and part of the overall regional system for water supply. Secondly, we want to encourage the Council to fulfill an earlier stated objective to upgrade and enhance access to and coordination of ocean and coastal information within California. I know there are some ideas about kind of revamping some of the websites and other information resources. We encourage you to do that. We see that there's a vital need for shared information and for effective information to be put out for the public and agencies to be dealing with. You could take a leadership role in that because of the cross-cutting nature of the work that you do want to support you in that and suggest that that should be a key outcome of your planning itself. And lastly, I want to suggest that the Ocean Protection Council should take a particular leadership role in coordinating policy development in a few key areas of the coast and ocean related to issues over the next couple of years, rather than as many agencies, and we're certainly guilty of this as well, tend to create a rather long list of issues and items and things we need to deal with. We suggest that you pick out a few of the key ones and really take on the leadership for policy development or policy clarification where important. They have huge benefit to public and coastal protection and work of all the agencies. I'd suggest that once through cooling might be one of those, dealing with issues of marine debris and aquaculture, certainly planning for climate instability and global climate change, and ecosystem management, because those issues cut across so many agencies that have differing mandates, differing statutory authorities and responsibilities. We think that you're uniquely positioned to be able to lead that discussion, shepherd that policy development in a way that would be very beneficial. Again, because of our unique role and responsibilities in managing and protecting California's coast and ocean resources, we want to work closely with you and your staff as you develop the strategic plan. We're ready and able to do that and right across the bay from your staff, so we'll be looking forward to working with you wherever we can and helping out as best we can.
Great, Al. We're going to need to help. We appreciate you coming and offering these suggestions. Well done. Warner Chabot, followed by Rod Fujita. Warner?
Thank you, Warner Chabot, the Ocean Conservancy. We strongly support and endorse the process. As you know, the Ocean Conservancy already provided you with a sample vision statement with 10 suggested measurable 10-year goals on ocean policy for ocean issues. We appreciate the commitment that this council has demonstrated for an open participatory process that will involve all the stakeholders. We also thank you very much for proposing a concise 5-month process that won't be, we hope, a mind-numbing, endless planning process that's the equivalent of the Bataan Death March. we recognize that you need to find a balance between getting broad input from the public, scientific advisors, policy leaders, and experts in private sector that have a sincere and legitimate interest in these issues. We recognize and would want to point out that you already have a priorities and issues memo that was produced by your staff that this commission adopted last summer that we think provides a good basic framework of starting to outline some of the major issues and priorities of this council. And I think that that document should be, you know, seen as a major reference document for this planning process. We think you can set a bold vision with very ambitious goals. Certainly, our governor, within about 30 days, produced a $220 billion infrastructure vision that he presented to this state for 10 years and $220 billion. Certainly, this process in 5 months could produce a five-year vision statement for restoring, managing, and better monitoring our ocean legacy and heritage. So we thank you for doing this, and we're more than happy to work with you and to try to do what we can in the nonprofit sector to try to do outreach. We think the process that you have demonstrated both at this council and through the MLPA process to webcast and put documents on the website demonstrates a strong commitment to an open and transparent process, and we think that will help accelerate and make this very open and participatory. So thank you.
Thank you for your help, Warner. I appreciate it. Rod?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the council. I'm Rod Fujita with the Environmental Defense. Environmental Defense also endorses very strongly the strategic planning process that you're about to undertake. And I think the outline that Neil laid out was very logical and rational. One idea that I would ask you to consider, both in developing the outline and structure of your strategic plan, and also kind of as an overarching principle, maybe in your mission statement, is the idea that the strategic plan is really an opportunity to make sure that the projects and activities that this council undertake add up to more than the sum of the parts, that there's synergy between the projects, and that you really take this cross-sectoral mandate, the ecosystem mandate that COPA gives to you very seriously and make it operational. One way to do that is in addition to the sectors that Neil laid out, you know, the various threats to the ocean, fisheries, coastal development, and the like, you may want to consider adding a section on cross-sectoral challenges. And by that I mean, well, it would be a set of objectives that would explicitly recognize the value that ecosystem-based management planning processes like the one you'll consider this afternoon from Morro Bay, and also projects that require the council to grapple with this challenge of streamlining regulations and harmonizing the regulations of the agencies that you represent in order to achieve ecosystem-based management, to address threats that cross sectors of air, water, land, and ocean. If that's incorporated in your strategic plan and you have an explicit objective to do that, it'll make the justification for those kinds of projects even stronger. And I know you're committed to those principles, but it's always nice to have that explicitly stated in a plan. And finally, you might consider a section of the strategic plan on financing ocean protection and ecosystem-based management. I know that the state is undertaking a financial planning process with respect to the Marine Life Protection Act. I think it would be nice to have a section like that in this plan as well, because not only is interest growing and constituencies are growing, so it creates an opportunity to get more financing from traditional sources like legislative appropriations, but there's a growing interest in non-traditional sectors as well with partnerships with private foundations, things like user fees, special stamps on users to finance some of these activities, and finally the kind of financial instruments that you're supporting Environmental Defense and Shore Bank to investigate with respect to fisheries. So I thank you, and thanks for all your efforts and the great progress you've made thus far.
Rod, thanks for your help. This is this conversation for all of us is important. I mean, we've kind of laid out a process here, and we appreciate your efforts and willing to help us in that regard. We've We've got a timeline. We've got the items up, the preliminary documentation outline up on the agenda, some supporting documentation. We'll keep, or on the agenda, up on the website, I should say. We will keep you apprised of those activities and where we go. Obviously, at our April meeting, there'll be an extensive report on it. We encourage you. I mean, we'll be reaching out to constituencies. The question that Bill and others asked earlier about making sure we reach out to a number of those folks. You have ideas and thoughts about who should be involved. Make sure you get them to either Brian or Neil or Sam, the email. Now would be the time to do that. So I think all of that's important, and particularly as you look at the direction that we're heading. I mean, your help in this is going to be really important. Before we break for lunch, I had a request to speak card that I missed during the last conversation on the Ocean Protection Council Science Advisory Team. Mike Sutton, you asked to speak on the Science Advisory Team, and I apologize. This got down at the bottom of the list under number 6. So if you come on up, please, I'd love to have your comments on item 5, the Science Advisory Team. Mike?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Ocean Protection Council is the highest level body ever appointed in California to consider ocean conservation and management. It's got an ambitious legislative mandate from the California Ocean Protection Act. It seems to me that we ought to keep two things in mind that are bound to be critical as this council evolves. One is the need to be science-driven, and in that sense, I'm glad to see the desire to appoint a science advisory team and a science advisor, a single person, to the council, because I think that's extremely important. We have a lot of other examples of state boards and bodies that are science-driven, and they're among the most effective. The other, at the risk of being impolitic, the second critical factor, I think, in the development of the Ocean Protection Council is independence. And I would like to offer the Air Resources Board as an example of both of these. Secretary Lloyd would know better than I, but it seems to me that the Air Resources Board embodies an example of a science-driven body that's independent of the agencies involved. Now, we're all thankful for the tremendous investment of Sam and the Coastal Conservancy and yourselves at the Resources Agency, but my sense is that if the Ocean Protection Council becomes known as nothing more than an extension of either of those two agencies, it won't be as effective as it could be. And so I would encourage you to consider, maybe through the strategic planning process, or maybe it would take a legislative fix. I don't know at this stage. But I think independence is one of the most critical things, and that is not to take away in any respect from the good work of the Coastal Conservancy or the Resources Agency. I'm glad to see the commitment there. But as we look down the pike several years, history suggests anyway that the most effective councils of this sort are the most independent ones and the most science-driven ones. And just a quick comment, if I may, on agenda item 6. One of the things that makes this council so effective, it seems to me, is the fact that it controls the purse strings of the Ocean Protection Trust Fund. Having some experience at grant-making, it seems to me one of the biggest dangers of grant-making of any sort is dissipation of funds on individually meritorious projects that don't add up to anything. We've seen that in private foundations. We've seen it in government programs as well. So I hope, and I see this in the outline, I hope that the strategic planning process will take into account a strategic grant-making plan as well for the use of those funds. If the electorate of California passes a 2006 resources bond in November, the council stands and the trust fund stands to gain a lot more money. And if that is the case, if we have, you know, tens, perhaps hundreds of millions to spend, we have a responsibility to spend that wisely and spend it in a manner that really adds up to more than the sum of the parts. So, thank you.
Well said. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, we're gonna break for an hour. Let's break for an hour for lunch. We'll be back here between, say, by 1:30. We'll start things up again. Thank you.